Our reading today, our scripture reading on this Mission Sunday, is from a letter written by a man named James, who many people say was actually the brother of Jesus. James became the first leader of the first church, if you will, that was organizing, the first people who were organizing around the idea of Jesus Christ. And he knew Jesus well. And in his letter to all the followers that he wrote it to, James teaches us that authentic faith, a real faith, is demonstrated by the way that we behave, even in our ordinary day-to-day lives. Our faith becomes real through action. He's saying that when we truly follow in the way of Jesus, that we will actually begin to act like Jesus. We'll begin to love like Jesus loved. Faith is more than just our private prayers. It's an action. It's an action verb. Think of faith as an action verb. We practice out there in the real world like we're going to do later this afternoon. And many of us will do that. We're going to not only hear about hunger issues and food, but we're actually going to put our feet on the ground and literally walk our talk. So hear this teaching, this very clear teaching from James, brother of Jesus, read to us today by Shirley Hitting and her daughter Elizabeth.
My brothers and sisters, do you, with your acts of favoritism, really believe in our Lord Jesus Christ? For if a person with gold rings and in fine clothes comes into your assembly, and if a poor person in dirty clothes also comes in, and if you take notice of the one wearing the fine clothes and say, "Have a seat here, please," while to the one who is poor you say, "Stand there," or "Sit at my feet," have you not made distinctions among yourselves? Have you not become judges with evil thoughts?
Listen, my beloved brothers and sisters. Has not God chosen the poor in the world to be rich in faith and to be heirs of the promised kingdom to those who love God?
What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but do not have works? Can faith save you?
If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, "Go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill," and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that?
So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead.
But someone will say, "You have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I, by my works, will show you my faith."
The word of God leading us to be people of God.
Don't worry, I'm not going to read my notes, but they're here for my security.
Here, I have this.
Oh, thank you. Wow, that's great. It's better than wearing, you know, uncomfortable high heels. This is great. Thank you. I want to start off by saying a big thank you. There are partners, we have many partners at Open Table, community groups that give to our organization and support our work. But I have to say, TriCon is in a different league. Every year, we count on our operating budget through the mission work of this church. It is hugely helpful to know that we will have money to pay for the things that aren't so sexy, like heat and enough extra grocery bags when we run out and that kind of thing. So we really, really appreciate it. And when we did our big move 3 years ago, or 2 years ago, you helped us purchase a convection oven, which has now turned into at least 20,000 meals for people. That's a huge gift to Open Table. You may not know it, but about 15 years ago, Open Table came here. It started out at the First Parish Church, and they did some renovations, and it moved here. And I understand that the sextons from each church talk about what a pain in the butt it is to have open table, because we require a lot of maintenance. So thank you for that as well. Part of our lore also was that when John Lombard was a minister here and when our operation was here, he sat with people every Thursday night. That to me is huge. That's walking the talk. It's not just hosting, but it's being in partnership with the people here. And last but not least, 5 years ago, for our 25th celebration of Open Table, we invited our founder, Margie Good Patterson, to come and be celebrated for her work. And she had a piano concert here in your church, because you have a beautiful piano and one that met with her regard as being good enough. She has a PhD in piano. So today is somewhat synchronistic. 30 years ago, the kernel for starting Open Table happened at this crop walk that you were going to participate in today. Margie invited, I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek, her son, her teenage son, to do the crop walk with her. And like often happens with parents who want their children to realize we don't just cater to your needs, but there's a bigger world out there that you too could be a part of helping, she learned a lot. She was listening with what the Benedictine monks would say. She was listening with the ear of her heart. She didn't just walk, but she listened to what was being said on the walk with other people who were doing the work of addressing hunger in our area. What she learned was a little distressing. That in this community, which is known for being affluent, there was no resources being given to people of need. Well, a lot of people said, of course not, not in this community, there is no need. But just like we said during the children's sermon, you can't see hunger. And even I, after working at Open Table for the past 20 years, I make the mistake when somebody walks in, I think they're a volunteer and they are actually coming for services. It's easy to do because you really can't see when people are in need. So I'm going to start with a wide-angle lens. My husband, who's a photographer, would think that's a great idea. And then I'm going to narrow my talk down to what's really happening here in Concord and Carlisle, because I think that's really what people want to know about. So food insecurity, for all you kids out there, it's kind of a technical term. It's different than hunger, right? When we're hungry, we know we can go get some food. We may not do very well in school because we missed the bus and didn't have, didn't get breakfast, and we go to school and we're a little cranky. Some kid at Willard the other day told me he was hangry, you know? But that's a little different. So food insecurity is the state of not having access to enough nutritional, affordable food. Enough is 2,000 calories a day. That's 800 million people in our world. I can't even wrap my head around that. And in our country, that's 40 million. Of that 40 million, 12 million are children. 12 million children in the United States are food insecure. In Concord and Carlisle, based on a 2015 census, there are about 650 individuals that live in Concord and Carlisle who are living at 200% of the poverty line. And as many of you know, with homelessness and housing issues and expensive housing, that we say 200% of poverty because we have to make allowances for how much it costs to live here. So at Open Table, the community we see, and we do track the numbers of people who come to us, we see 60 families from the local community. We have 650 who come to us, but 60 from Concord and Carlisle. What gives? Are you thinking about the numbers? Why do we not have more? Why aren't we helping more people? Well, for a really long time, people kept thinking it was not enough food. But guess what? 40% of the food produced in this world goes into the trash. That makes me so sad. So 800 million people need food. 40% of all the food made goes into the trash, doesn't even go to livestock. That's a solvable problem. And in Concord and Carlisle, we got 600 people. We could easily feed 600 people. We really can do that. So today, I am asking you to do something different. I want everyone today to think about how would you practice in your lives, through your church, through that chain, radical hospitality. The Chards are going to have a dinner. Everybody, tonight, come on over. Hetty's, I know she's a great cook. Doesn't matter, her house isn't clean. I'm sorry, Hetty, I hope I'm not telling secrets. Her house isn't clean, her dog is, you know, got dog fur, whatever. We're all going over there to Hetty's house, and we're going to bring food. Don't worry, she may not have enough, but you're gonna bring food with you. And clean up, well, you know, hopefully people will stay and clean up, okay? But the idea is not only this church, but when we put a sandwich board outside of Hetty's house that said free food, all welcome. That's radical, right? I know people in this church, wait a minute, what's the committee for that? Wait a minute, I didn't sign up for that. Do I have to go? It's where my heart is right now because I really want to address stigma. Stigma is the number one reason people in our community don't get the help that they need. I have a pantry director right now who could get as much food as we could if we could get more refrigerator space. We're actually talking to Boone Ice to get more refrigerator space because we've already maxed out our beautiful walk-in refrigerator and freezer from Middlesex Bank. We can get the food. Salvaged food is everywhere. We have enough bread to make bread pudding for the whole nation. So it's not about not having enough food. So now I'm going to tell you a couple stories. I'm going to tell you three stories about three women. The first one is me, because I always feel like I need to be authentic about who I am and what I'm not. I am not food insecure. I have never been food insecure. I have been hungry. I have been hangry. But I'm not food insecure. I did, however, move to this community 18 years ago with my husband and two kids. My mom was actively dying of cancer back in Indiana. I had a son who had one leg, and I knew that I needed to be out in this community making sure that people understood Nico and that he would have access to a great community of people that understood that he did not need help, that he really could advocate for himself. And that's what Nico wanted in this world. The same time I was grieving, and I was trying to figure out how could I connect to this community of Concord and Carlisle? Where did people go to connect in a real way? Having lived in other communities when he was born, I knew that community was essential. It wasn't just a nicety to have that. So I joined the Newcomers Club. Anybody here been in the Newcomers Club? Yeah. Yeah, you had gourmet dinner. Really fun. I like to cook. The thing is, what happened to me was I was cooking by myself in my kitchen, and my kids were running around, and it cost money. My husband doesn't drink, so he always felt like, we pay for all this wine. It was kind of expensive. Well, it didn't exactly fit the bill, but I met some nice people. And then we joined the Thoreau Club within the first month of being here because there were no children in my community. Literally none in the month of August. I later learned everybody goes someplace in August. I was getting worried. So I started looking for places to cook, and I cooked at my church. I actually did cooking classes out of my house because I'm a really good cook. And what I tell you is I'm a scrappy cook. I like it. I like looking in my refrigerator and seeing, wow, what do you do with roasted cauliflower, hot sauce, and sausage? And this is something we do every single week when we cook dinner at an open table. We look at what we have, and we figure out how we can do it. So that became my go-to place, a place I really loved to be. And to this day, I would tell you the people there that if I had a problem, they would be the ones showing up to help me. My church is good. I belong to First Parish Church, but they're the ones that know me and I know them, and we know how to work together to get something done. So that's story number one. Now I'm going to tell you story number two. One night I'd arrive at the dinner at First Parish. It's every Thursday night here. It started 30 years ago, right? I arrive, and the volunteer coordinator introduces me to this wonderful volunteer. The reason she's wonderful is because she can be there at 4. 4 is a tough time to cover, and she can stay till close. So I meet her, and she seems very nice, and at the end of the night, she said, you know, I need a ride home. I said, no problem. I'll give you a ride home. I live over in West Concord. I'll give you a ride home. So she gets in my car, and what surprises me a little is she brings with her several bags of groceries from the pantry and a meal. So, oh, okay, that's cool. She's a guest volunteer. We have those, you know, volunteers who volunteer, and then they're also a guest at a different time. They bring their food home with them. And on the way home, she said, so I asked her, what do you think about this town you live in? She just moved here. She said, well, I've been wondering, what do you do? What do you mean, what do I do? I mean, what people do for fun here? I'm thinking back about when I had first moved here, the Thoreau Club, Gourmet Dinner Club, joining my kid's school, she's single, joining a church. I bring up church. I think, oh, that's a safe one for somebody who's food insecure. I said, well, what about church? And she says, oh, I belong to church. I get on the train every Sunday and I go to my church. It's in another community because you don't have my church here in your community. So that didn't work. Then what I learned later is that she actually had, in all these drives that we made together, because I started driving her every week when I would leave, she said, you know, I really need to figure out transportation in this town. I got a job all lined up for myself over at Hanscom Air Force Base, but I don't have anywhere to get there. There's no train. There's no bus. So Open Table kind of helped her get connected with a company called the Good News Garage, and she ended up getting maybe the last car they gave that year. So that was good. She got a car so she'd get work. Then I learned that she stopped coming. And I ran into her and I said, why are you not coming anymore to Open Table? She goes, oh, why go to the pantry? I just don't go to the dinner. I said, why don't you go to the dinner? Well, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but I lived in a shelter for 2 years before I came to Concord. I was assigned this town. And what I learned about this town is you really got to fit in. It wouldn't be good for me to keep coming to the dinner unless I was volunteering. So I'm going to end with a third story, another guest. And I'm then going to ask you a couple questions. So I don't know about you, but I'm feeling a little uncomfortable with the way the sermon's going because I'm kind of digging a little bit at something that's hard to talk about here. There's a difference between charity and a difference between service. There's a difference between a hand out and a hand up. There's something called recipient fatigue. It gets pretty darn tiring to be the person that gets the gift every week. What if I want to do the serving? What if I want to participate in the improvement of my own life? How do you do that in a community where the entrance fee is a Thoreau Club fee, or the Gourmet Dinner Club cost, or sending your kids on service trips that cost a lot of money? It's sobering for me to realize that. I feel like I'm a person who has a generous heart. I care about people. And I think probably this church does. So it's not to say that generosity and service and will to bring Christ's work into the community is not appreciated. The question is, how do we do it in partnership? And I think it's radical hospitality. I really do. So there are people in Open Table who have been there much longer than I have. There have been 5 leaders before me. I have a sneaking suspicion the old guard would call me the leader who brought the most change.
I like it, and sometimes I also feel a little nervous about it. But when I said recently that we're not going to limit how much food people take from the pantry, I got a lot of pushback. Well, if the issue isn't getting enough food there, but the issue is making sure people get what they need and what they need, why are we limiting the amount they need? Last time I went to the grocery store, nobody told me I couldn't have more cheese if I wanted it, even though my doctor might say I shouldn't eat it. Why is it that when I said to my board, I want a sandwich board that says, free dinner in front of the First Parish Church every Thursday night, why were they worried? That's what our values say. That's what the mission statement of Open Table says. We're open to all people. And I just heard it in your own mission. You are open to all people. We want all people. But I know at my coffee hour, as soon as I walk into coffee hour, I'm talking to the people I know. How do we bring more people here and make them feel welcome? The 600 families that live in this community that don't feel like they want to be stigmatized by walking into Open Table's doors. I've got work to do. There's a new model needed. There's a new way of operating going to be required for this one. I thank many of you here, Tom Piper, who has sat with me and looked at my books and explained things that I needed to do better for how to represent our organization. Preston Scott, who facilitated conversations. Carol Antos, who brought our development team to a more professional level. You have real partners in this church, and I think the partnership I would ask you to think about is how do you partner every day? How do you bring radical hospitality to the life that you live? It's messy. It's not a committee. It's not a committee. I have three kids. Each of them have done some incredible service work, two of them. One of them would say to me, Mom, what I believe I do is if I see somebody who is struggling, I give them my seat. I talk to them. I help them carry something up the hill. I don't need to be somebody who does grand gestures. I respect that. And today when you walk in that crop walk, I'm thinking about Margie Good Patterson. She has no idea in some ways that what she thought of during that walk, and then she did an ad in the newspaper and said, who cares about feeding people? And it ended up 50 people showed up from all different churches, okay, walks of life. And before they left that night, they had the principles and values of the organization laid out, which was, anybody is welcome to come to this dinner. So if we did last year 365,000 pounds of food times 30 years, and I know we've grown, but, you know, that's a couple million pounds of food we've distributed, thanks to Margie. And how many meals? 10,000 last year times 30? Well, another 300,000 meals we've delivered? Huh, staggering. But what she wouldn't be happy about? So what she really wanted was that this community that we live in be a place where anybody felt comfortable walking in the door to have dinner together. That isn't happening necessarily. I have to twist and turn people's arms to stay. You feel uncomfortable, put money in the donation can. Help clean up at the end of the night. But sit in community with the people who are here. That is really what I would say Christ taught. How do we blur the lines between us and them? Who sits at the table, who serves at the table? That's radical hospitality. Third story. 3 years ago, a woman walked in. I greeted her. We were in Coolidge, our temporary location, after we got kicked out of the mill. And we were temporarily in an old school building, old school dungeon. Scary. The woman walked in and she said, I said, hi, how are you? And I assumed she was a volunteer. She was impeccably dressed and she looked like the color went right out of her. I said, you're a little early for your shift. Oops, bad on my part. Luckily, somebody who was a colleague of hers came running over and hugged her and said, oh, I'm so glad you're here. And they talked about how awkward it was. And she said, you don't have to feel awkward about this. You know, we'll make this work. And I happened to do her application that day, and she talked to me about how if she'd only known that Open Table had two sites, she would have come to Maynard in a heartbeat, because she had a single child that all through high school she struggled to feed. Now he's in college, and she was so proud of that fact. She was really proud of the fact that he was now in college. So this past fall, I was doing a random survey in September, trying to find out how people liked this new way of operating where you could take as much food as you wanted. How did it work for each person? And she said, well, I really like it because, you know, I go to friends and family here in Concord to get my fruits and vegetables, and then I have to supplement it with what I get at Open Table because I have a really special diet. I only eat fresh fruits and vegetables and very little meat and processed foods. So I really like it now that I can take as much as I want of the areas I need. I said, that's great. And the final question I had for her was, and is there anything else we could do at Open Table that would be helpful to you? And she said, I want you to know it is so hard to walk through that door. I thought we had beaten that one. I thought we had addressed that one. We have film on the windows of our new site so people can't see you as you walk in. We've reduced the number of volunteers so it doesn't feel like a fishbowl. And the most beautiful thing is we don't have a line anymore outside the door, which I've come to understand is one of the gold seals of being a good program. There's no line outside the door. People have a place to sit, have warm food to eat. They've just come from work. And she pointed out to me, Janine, this is really humane. I love that you have food. I can take the edge off from work because I'm usually flying in here. And man, I wish I had had that children's corner that you've got now, because if I had brought my son here and he could have sat there while I did my shopping, it would have been great. You know, our wait times are down to 20 minutes, which is unheard of for us. But still, it's walking through that door. So we've got work to do. Margie would be pleased to hear the numbers, and she'd probably be pretty displeased to hear about our dinner woes. We've invited Minuteman ARC and the Guild to dinner, something to me is a win-win because they've been serving our community, helping Open Table do work. The least we could do is invite them for dinner. I hope you'll come some night, maybe not all at once. And that was just a joke about Hetty's. You don't all have to come for dinner. Oh, she's saying, come on. But I do hope you will take a day, a Thursday night or a Tuesday night, and come have dinner. I know Polly has, and I appreciate that. If you come some night and your faith group is got too many people, sit down and have dinner. Don't go home. Take that advantage of meeting other people. Be in community and in fellowship. So I'm going to end my talk now with a wonderful quote. I had the opportunity to go to the Metro West Nonprofit Leadership Conference last week, and the award for lifetime service, get my glasses on, I can see nothing, hold on, went to a gentleman named Hubert Jones, or Hubie Jones. He was the Dean Emeritus at the Boston University School of Social Work. He's a wonderful man. His wife was the founder of METCO. He was a man who believes that everyone should have access, including people with special needs and people of color, to school, the same access to school as everyone else. He's a wonderful guy. So this is what he said before he left, and I share it with you. Service is the rent we pay to live in the world we believe in. Service is the rent that we pay for living. That's what I do. I pay my rent, said Jones. I urge you all to do the same. Thank you.